Ducks fans, are you ready? You are listening to the Ducks and Pucks podcast. This is the number one home for Anaheim Ducks talk and analysis. Here we go.
Welcome to the show. This show is Mike Walters, along with my co-host Eddie Richard, and we are back. The Ducks continued their losing streak, sadly. You know, when we finished the last show, they had lost a couple games, and now they lost a couple more, though they got some points and showed some improvement. And then they turned it on. They've been on a four-game winning streak now. So plenty of things to talk about and cover on this show. We talked about Jack Eichel. Finally, that drama is over, but we will still cover it a little bit on here, along with some other trade rumors, some other injury updates that we usually cover. We'll also talk about how the Ducks turned it around. And we have a poll question about the Ducks' all-time top five players. There was a lot of talk once Getzlaf beat Tamu Solani's point record. And so we'll have a little discussion about that, plus plenty of fan questions as well. So before we get to all that, Eddie, what have you been up to lately?
I went to Colorado for Halloween weekend. That was extremely fun. Where my buddy hit me up when I was talking to him via my Bluetooth speaker. I almost got hit. Some idiot took the red light. And usually when my light turns green, I always hesitate. So even with my hesitation before I just sped off, this guy just blatantly ran it. And I was within inches of getting in a really bad accident. So it's like a YOLO moment went off in my head when he invited me, because I almost said no. So I said, you know what? Screw it. Once I got home, I just went online. I booked my flight. 3 weeks later, I was over there. It was probably the best time I ever had in my life. It was good to see him again. I met him down here. They're from Poland, so they're like just amazing people. I had a great time, like from start to finish. Flew back over here. My buddy picks me up from Ontario Airport, and we got a table at another place, and it's Halloween 2.0. I went as Where's Waldo the first night, which is pretty funny, and then I went as Scooby-Doo with the full onesie and everything the second night, so it was just... It was probably the greatest Halloween I've had in my life. I'm grateful for the friends that I have and the experience and opportunities that I get to do. So it's pretty fun. And I think me flying out to Colorado, and then I guess I reset something in our timeline where the Ducks just, they stopped their losing streak and they started going on fire.
Yeah, seriously, it's been a turnaround for this team, absolutely. So I didn't have as much excitement. I had some friends over here and there the last couple weeks, some family too. So some get-togethers at my house, some little parties and things like that. I didn't really go anywhere, but I am planning to go to Vegas on New Year's when the Ducks take on the Golden Knights. So I am excited for that. I went, I think it was 2 years ago for that game. So I'm looking forward to that, a little road trip to Vegas. I've been doing some of that lately, some road trips to Arizona too. We have some family out there, so I've been doing some of that. But pretty mellow the last couple weeks as of right now. But I'm looking forward to November and December, doing plenty of road trips. So with that, let's talk about the Ducks. I mean, they look like the comeback kids, I guess you could say, in some of these last games. They did take on the Jets the time that we talked on the last show, and I don't know if Dallas Eakins listened to the show or whatnot, because Derek Grant was benched and Sonny Milano was put back in. We do joke about that. They listen to the show, and I actually do know that the team does listen to the show. They've told me some of them do. So I think, Eddie, you mentioned Comtois does listen to the show, so if he's listening, you will get back on it, Comtois. We love you. But in this game against the Jets, it looked like the Ducks were going to turn around things. In this game, they got out to a lead and had it at the end, really. But a couple weird goals. Nikolai Ahlers, he gets a weird bounce, and they snatch it away at the end. But the Ducks had the lead, in the third period, and it looked like they had this game. They played well. They're trying to turn things around, break that losing streak. Zegras got his first goal, but they just came up short in this one, Eddie. Even though they outshot the Jets 35-25.
Yeah, it's just those lucky bounces go one way, and it just kind of dictates the game after that, changes the whole momentum of the game, and you're done from that. Same thing happened when they played the Minnesota Wild off that rookie's skate when he went to go lean down to pick up his stick. It's just one of those unfortunate bounces. It didn't go the Ducks' way. I'm glad they put your boy, Sonny Milano, back in there, because he ended up getting his first goal of the season. So that was good to see. It was good to see him and Zegras have that chemistry. I don't know, we can call them like Sunny Z or something, make it some kind of nickname for both of them, because they look absolutely amazing together. It's just instant chemistry. I just it's so unbelievable, and it's really fun to watch both of them play on the line together.
Dude, Sunny Z, that sounds like a new drink that we should market, Eddie.
Oh, yes, we should make a drink called Sunny Z and just market the hell out of it, or drink it during the show. It has to be like kind of like vodka infused, though, right? It seems like it'd be like a vodka drink. I don't know.
I know. I'm drinking a Moscow Mule right now, so I'm trying to think. What could we do with like ginger beer, vodka, and something else?
Or like Sunny Delight in vodka, like little a modified, I guess, screwdriver, right?
Oh, there you go.
Infused in vodka.
There you go. That would be exciting.
Old school drink.
Yeah, exactly. So,
or, you know, he could make some t-shirts too, Sunny Z.
There you go, Sunny Z. Yeah, he did like our t-shirt we did, Free Z. So maybe we could make Sunny Z. all right, so okay, back to this nonsense. So yeah, so the Ducks looked like they were going to break the streak. Like you said, Milano back in there developing some chemistry with Zegras. They both get their first goals in the season. Ducks lose that game. Then they go play the Sabres, the team that we've been talking about like nonstop, right? In the last show, last couple shows, always talking about Jack Eichel this, Jack Eichel that. I know some of you are tired of hearing that. We'll just talk a little bit about it towards the end of the show. But so the Ducks go against them, and they get down in this one. You know, early in this one, they get down 1-0. Then they're, you know, early in the second period, they're down 3-0. But we see the comeback kids, right? We talked about that in the past. They didn't have that the last couple seasons, and they show a flare of that in this game and the game against the Vegas Knights too that we'll get to in a minute. Troy Terry, who's been on fire, scores. He's currently on 11 game point streak. Just ridiculous. This guy has been killing it. You're going to hear Troy Terry's name a lot on this show. You had Henrique get in there as well, and the Ducks rallied. You know, they got it within 3-3. Went to overtime. Gave up a last-minute goal in overtime. They lost this one 4-3. I really thought the Ducks could have pulled this one out. I was happy to see them fight back, get a point, not lay down and die, so to speak. Another game where they outshot the opponent, too. They also destroyed the Sabres in the faceoff circle, winning a 2-1 advantage. So I didn't like that they got down by so much, Eddie, but the fact that they came back and almost, you know, they basically stole a point, almost stole 2 points in this game. So something, again, yes, the losing streak continued, but hey, build off of this. They character, hey, we're down by three, we don't give a shit, right? We can come back. And that was how this Duck team was a few years ago, and I'm happy to see them do that in this game, in the Vegas game.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. And of course, this whole comeback was led, or almost comeback was led by Troy Terry. We're going to keep saying his name because he's just been absolutely on fire. I think my mouth just started burning right now by saying Troy Terry. Or maybe it's some other medical reason. I don't know. But no, I'm just playing. No, it was good. Buffalo going into that fast start. They actually had a pretty decent start to start the season. So you're watching this game like, okay, this is going to be bad. It's not going to be good. And all of a sudden, they just turn it up. They don't give up. They're resilient. And they fight back. And they steal a point. They couldn't steal Jack Eichel from the Sabres, but they did steal a point, so that's all that matters. We saw that resiliency, and we saw the team clicking and being more fun to watch, and like all of our young guns just stepping up and rising to the occasion, and they did just that.
Yeah, I mean, the only other thing that was unfortunate in this game, and God, we'll talk about this too, because we'll talk a little bit about trade stuff later on, and I almost feel like I jinxed it, but we had talked about Raquel and how the Ducks missed out on an opportunity to trade him. And here we go in this game. He gets hurt with a bad check on his shoulder. And then we find out he's on the IR. So I'm sitting there going, man, are you kidding me right now? So won't go into that too much now. We'll talk about it, like I said, when we cover just the Ducks team and the trade rumors and injuries and all that. But they did come back, at least tie it, stole a point. Like you said, we stole a point. We didn't steal Eichel. We're going to weigh in on that as well. So the Ducks' losing streak continued. They got a point, and then they faced the Vegas Knights. Same thing. Vegas would go up on this one eventually during this game, 4-1. Zegras did get his second goal of the game. Troy Terry, again, getting a goal like we talked about. And the Ducks fought this one, you know, all the way to shootout. And it looked good. They thought the Ducks were actually going to come back and steal a point in this one. Trevor Zegras with a phenomenal shootout goal, just smooth. As I think I tweeted that out, and it looked like the Ducks were going to be fine, but they couldn't get any more goals in the shootout. Vegas ended up getting one in the third round to extend it, and then they got another one. They ended up winning this one. So tough loss, you know. The Ducks outshot, but barely, 42-38 in this one. They did have three power play chances. They didn't score. One of the very, very few games that they have not scored on a power play. That's another thing we'll be talking about. The Ducks' power play has been phenomenal over the streak, minus this one game. But another game, Eddie, where they're down by three, and they rally back, and they fight back, and they're showing resiliency and character.
Yeah, it kind of helped that Vegas was out the Pacioretty and Stone, too, some of their big guns on the top line. That helped a little bit. Vegas is such a powerhouse team. They're a really fast team, a hard team to play against. The Ducks have had their struggles against Vegas since they came into the league, so it's good to see them fight back and once again climb up there and make it a game and steal a point once again. It's so funny, too, that it's either Carlson or Theodore. They usually get points in these games. And, of course, William Carlson had another he had an assist and another point against the Ducks. But it's good to see our young guns respond. Zegras and Milano are on the board again. You see Terry with another goal in this game. Fortunately, Getzlaf could have had the record this game, but Manson's fight kind of negated that, which I think it happened for an amazing reason, because he ends up getting that record the next game. But it was an overall good game. You can't be mad at either these games, the shootout loss against Vegas or the loss against Buffalo, because they fought back and it really showed that comeback mentality that we haven't seen in a few seasons.
Yeah, seriously, that's one aspect of the Ducks that's been MIA and now it's back. I did think it was interesting. A lot of people were upset with Manson getting into that fight, and I think you made a good point there, Eddie, is that, yeah, that happened, but then he was able to end up breaking the record at home in the next game against Montreal, so I thought that was kind of funny. Plus, not trying to defend the situation, but, I mean, Manson's getting engaged to go to a fight and whatever. I mean, at that point, you're not following the play, and you don't know exactly what happened. So I know people were upset, but I guess it all ended up right, because, you know, then the Ducks go on their winning streak. At home, Halloween, they have four games in a row. They win all four of these games, and what a moment, man! In that game against Montreal, I mean, the Ducks won this game 4-2, and you had them there. Getting that assist on Terry's goal, great backhand pass. Terry just springs in for that score, and crazy, man! I mean, sit here and think that Getzlaf would break that record for Tamu, because we didn't know what he was going to do at the end of last season. Remember, we heard that he might go to Colorado. We heard that he might go to Vegas. He stays with the team instead. Now he breaks that record. He's getting even closer to 1,000 points as a Duck. It's just amazing. It's just interesting, you know, after what had happened at the end of last season, we didn't know. And now here we are this season with him breaking the record and doing it at home.
Oh, yeah, it was funny. I don't know if you listened to Corey Perry's. They asked him about that, and he jokingly said that, like, half those points were from him, too. So he feels kind of, like, into that, too. So that was pretty funny of him talking about his former teammate. I'm really glad for Getzlaf, though. He's put in the work. He's grinded it out. I think it was important for him to get this record. It's important for him to get that 1,000 points, which is he's closing in on, and he'll get that really soon. That's going to be really special to see that, too. It's a moment for him that's our captain that's been playing on the Ducks since he was a rookie. So, like, whatever he decides to do come trade deadline, if the Ducks aren't in that playoff position, I think he has a better, I guess, if he wants to leave and try to chase a cup for one last time, his final seasons, I think it's kind of easier for him to do that since he has his record set in stone already. He's going to hit that 1,000 points. But, yeah, it was a really special game. And go figure, it's off Terry's goal. Terry Perry, it kind of rhymes. So I guess something happened. The whole universe aligned where Manson would get that fight. He's not going to break it in front of Vegas fans. They don't deserve to see that. It was in front of our fans, our house. It's just only fitting that record gets broken at Honda Center.
Yeah, and it was an exciting game. I mean, the Ducks got a couple more goals on the power play from Henrique and Lettieri. This game was crazy. I mean, you'd think the Ducks probably would have blown them out by more looking at the stat line. They outshot Montreal 26-18. Faceoff circle was crazy. They had won 71% of the faceoffs. The Ducks converted on 2 out of 6 power plays. And, you know, just a great game overall. They played well, finally turned it around. Early game on Halloween, like we said, you know, Sam Carrick got a late goal in there too as well at the end. And the Ducks ended up winning this one. But again, I guess the bad part that we have to talk about is the injuries and whatnot for this team. And we saw Zegras get crushed into the boards by Paquette. Paquette ended up getting suspended a couple of games on the next day after that. Zegras was out, did come back and play in this game, which was a good thing. I don't know what's going on with players now, but they seem like they're going after Zegras because they took a run on him in this game. And PK Subban took a run at him in the game against the Devils as well. But and now, unfortunately, he is out, as we've talked about, with some of these injuries, you know, for a couple games. And we'll kind of get, you know, more into that when we talk about our team segment and whatnot. But he hung in there on this one. And like you said, Getzlaf getting that record at home was special. And we'll go into it a little bit, but you got to see the presentation with him against the Coyotes. But before we get to that game, the Ducks then, they played the Devils. And this is probably one of their best games ever. They ended up beating New Jersey 4-0. Like I said, Zegras got hit by PK Subban this game with a dirty slew foot. That's like PK Subban's favorite move now, apparently. And he ended up getting fined $15,000, which is pretty much nothing. But the Ducks ended up winning this game. You had, again, Getzlaf scoring on the power play. Troy Terry getting 2 goals. I mean, this man is just going bonkers right now. Getzlaf and Terry together, and Zegras and Milano together. I mean, this is what has been working for the team offensively. And, you know, they took it to the Devils. Devils had 5 power plays in this game, did not convert. Ducks got 2 out of 7. And I don't know, out of all the games I saw, I thought this was the best game. And Gibson looked really good as well. And the Ducks, you know, played well overall. I just thought this was a fantastic game for the Ducks. And they really just kept the Devils down and out pretty much most of the game, Eddie.
Oh, yeah, Devils had no chance. Ducks played great fundamental hockey from start to finish, from both ends of the ice. It was good to see. It's unfortunate that Zegras is being attacked. And see, this goes to show that we need the grinder, we need the enforcers back in this game to police the ice, because since the game kind of took a turn, and I guess people are more soft and they don't want that kind of hard-hitting style of hockey now, you're seeing more of these plays and these players get away with it. It was great to see Sonny Milano go after Paquette against the Canadiens. He right away just dropped the gloves and went after him, but he's not a player you want to be defending a guy like Zegras. So you want him on the ice as much as possible to make them pay on the board and get a goal. But it's just kind of uncalled for. This is the third or fourth different time we've seen Zegras just being blatantly pretty much attacked because of his style of player, his superstar status that he's developing into. You've seen the goalies countless times, Stolarz and Gibson, being ran into with minimal consequences at all. Like, it's getting to the point, it's ridiculous. Like, one of our players is going to get seriously hurt by someone else targeting them, and there's no consequences at all. People love to hate guys like Tom Wilson, Ryan Reeves, but when those guys are on the ice, or when you're playing against them, you think twice about going after one of your players. You think if we had a Tom Wilson or if we had a Ryan Reeves kind of player on the Ducks, you think PK Subban's going to be going running around slew footing people? No, because that guy is just he's trash and he'll get his ass kicked. It's not going to happen. And you have these kind of bottom six little fourth liner players or taking runs at our top players and they get suspended if they're gone for 5 minutes, 10-minute misconduct. You're not going to miss them on the ice. Now we're without Zegras for a few games because of these incidents that keep happening. It's getting ridiculous, and Ducks need to do something. You can't play a game, especially if a lot of people are excited because the Ducks just are going on this tear right now about playoffs. I still don't think this is a playoff team. I'm just throwing it out there right now. I'm not trying to be a negative Nally or anything. I'm just going with the facts that I have. But in the playoffs, all this intensity, all this hard hitting, all this grinding stuff is going to turn up. And the Ducks don't really have anyone to really answer those calls besides Delorier and Manson. But you can't just ride them and piggyback them. Like, there has to be some kind of other things. It's getting ridiculous to see our goalies getting ran into, our star players getting ran into. It's not really consequences for their actions.
Yeah, I mean, the one good thing is the league, you know, the player safety, which, you know, normally we dislike, but they actually suspended Paquette, which I was happy with that. Yeah, they fined Subban, whatever. So they're coming out against them for that. But you're right. The problem is in the game, in that moment, what do? You go back to the Kariya Solani era, and they had Todd Ewan and Stu Grimson that would go after these players. You know, you went after our star players. Then whoever went after the star players, Todd Ewan or Stu Grimson, would go after them. Either whether it was their star player or the guy that started the crap, whatever. They would go out there and make sure that, hey, listen, man, you want to check guys and do things, that's one thing. But when you start trying to, you know, hit people super hard and injure them or do dirty things like a slew foot, which is ridiculous in my opinion, that's one of the dirtiest plays, I think, in hockey, because a player can get hurt, especially by the way that they land on the ice, because they can land on their hip, their shoulder or their head, depending on you know, the way that fall happens. That's why I think PK Subban should have been suspended. I don't think a fine. The biggest reason why is because he's also done it multiple times. That's like his new favorite move for some reason. I don't tolerate that. I think that's a dirty play and has no business in the league of hockey. He should have been suspended. $15,000 is like nothing. That's like $100 to you and me. I mean, that's nothing to him. I mean, you know, it's a joke. So that's the only bad thing that's been happening in these games, is we've been seeing, you know, we saw Raquel get knocked out. Now we see Zegras, and, you know, he plays this game, but then he doesn't play the next two games. He's got the upper body injury. He's day to day. Raquel's week to week, and the Ducks are out without these guys. And miraculously, I think that's a huge point, because the Ducks go on and they beat the Coyotes and they beat the Blues. So without some of these guys, they're also without Silverberg, who's in the COVID protocol for these last couple games as well. The Ducks keep winning. I mean, it's been amazing for this team, minus these players, to keep it going. And then they followed up the game against New Jersey with another complete game against the Coyotes, which in this one, you have Gibson is not available because Gibson's sick, not COVID, but he's out too. And the Ducks still beat the Coyotes. I mean, I know they hadn't won a game in regulation, until they played Seattle. Sorry, Kraken. But anyways, they, at this point, hadn't won a game, and the Ducks win this one. They almost shut them out 3-0. Milano gets another goal on the power play. Henrique, Carrick, some of the other guys we talked about, you know, they get a spoiler and they get a late goal in this one. But the Ducks won this game, and no Silverberg, no Raquel, no Zegras, no Gibson. And they almost shut out the Coyotes. And I know they've been struggling. I get it. But hey, you're still, when you can shut out another team, I don't care what their record is. They can be 0-81. It doesn't matter. And it's the last game of the season. I don't care. They still beat this team, and the Ducks are missing a lot of players. And it was actually an exciting game in this one, because you went to this one, Eddie. You got to see the pregame. Tamu was there. They honored Getzlaff. And then there was just a crap ton of fights in the third period, too. So there was all kinds of stuff going on in this game. I was at home posting stuff. You were there posting stuff. You must have just had a blast being there, just the pregame and then all the stuff that happened during the game.
Oh, the pregame, too, was even more fun. all the drinks that he had. But, yeah, it was my season debut going to a game. I'd just been super busy with work and training and hockey. It just, like, I had zero time for myself. So just, like, going to the game, what made it more special is I got to hang out with my older brother. I haven't got to hang out with them in, I want to say, like, 6 or 7 months. Like, really just hang out as us two. So that was really special. The last time we went to a game together, I want to say it was 2019 against the Coyotes, and they ended up winning. I was kind of similar score, 4-1. So that was kind of special. But the whole game was cool, from Getzlaff being honored, seeing Solani there. It's always special when you see Solani there. And, of course, all the madness that happened in the third period. That was just, like, great. I got to try some of those new Ducks-inspired beers. I only took a sip of the IPA because I'm not an IPA drinker. I drink too fast to drink IPAs, so I kind of avoid those. But the one that I had, I forgot what it was called. I think it was like a blonde-inspired beer. It was really tasty. It was cool because it had the Ducks logo, so I think it tasted a little bit better, and I didn't even mind spending the $16, $17 per tall can or whatever it was. It just made it all worth it. But yeah, it was an overall fun game. Henry Mack 11 asked if I was sitting kind of behind Stolar, because he was right there on the glass. Yeah, I was about, I want to say, a row D, and that similar section right behind Stolar. So I had some pretty good seats. Usually I like to sit, if I had it my way, and I'd sit the 300 level all the time. I love, that's my favorite level, but the bottom 400 level would be my, I guess, my seat of preference, and you know, what my finances can afford. So, or when I go with you, Mike, to the games, you have like the perfect seats right there in the center. I love those. But yeah, it was fun. I sat lower. My brother just kind of had him experience that lower seating too. So it was a blast overall. And it was a good fun win. And I'm glad the Ducks won. I was worried, like, okay, they're playing a team that was like hasn't won a game all season. I don't want the Ducks to come in here getting all complacent. They have a 2-game win streak, and who knows? I just didn't want them to just kind of come into this game and think it was going to be easy, but it wasn't the case. Ducks came in ready to play. They still played that fun, sound, fundamental hockey, and they took it to them, and they didn't care if the Coyotes were, you know, the last place team that hasn't won a game. That third period really got chippy, and it was fun to see, being up that close, seeing that. I don't know. It was just the perfect game, I guess, the perfect first game I could have attended.
Yeah, that game got wild in the third period. You had Manson going at it with O'Brien. You had Comtois going at it with Larson. Then you had Delorier fighting O'Brien at the end of the game. And then when all the teams go to the benches, they're all yelling at each other. We post that GIF. Getzlaf goes off on their team. People close to the situation told me that he was yelling at O'Brien. And it sounded like he said something to the effect of, you're dead next time. I don't know if that's 100% accurate, if any of you are a good lip readers. But I posted it on social media, and that's what a lot of you said he was saying. It kind of looks like it. It's kind of hard to tell. But, man, that's one thing about this team, and I think I wrote it in this recap article, is this team's got passion, heart, and competitive drive. And that's one thing that I love seeing about this team. Even in the losing streak, they were coming back, fighting hard, forced overtime in two of those games, down by 3 goals. Here, you know, they're playing a team, like you said, Eddie, this team had not won a game. And I know a lot of people leading up to this game were like, uh-oh, here we go. They're playing a team that hasn't won in 10 games. The Ducks are probably going to choke or take it easy, or something's going to happen. They're going to underestimate. You know, it's a trap game, all that kind of stuff. Now, I'm not going to lie. I thought the same thing, too. I didn't want to post on social media. I'm like, I'm not going to say it. You know, I'm just putting the record in the game preview. Hey, these guys are 0-9-1. I'm like, yeah, they haven't been doing so well, but I'm just going to leave it at that. I was kind of nervous, too, but as far as entertainment value in this last couple weeks, this game by far was the most entertaining. That third period, I loved it. And I loved even Comtois getting into it. You know, we'll talk about him. He's been struggling and whatnot. Some fan questions from you guys as well. But overall, this was a great game. And you had Stolar's in net. We had Oscar Lopez on Instagram asked, you know, what do we think about Stolar's performance so far? And I like what I've seen. I don't think he's been outstanding, but he's been playing great. You know, he's got a 2.98 goals against and 912 save percentage. Yeah, his record's kind of iffy. He's got, you know, had some bad breaks here or there, but I like what I've seen from Stolar so far. I'm good with that. I think he's done great. Obviously, Dostal's the other one that's in the wings too, but that's one thing I don't worry about with this team. You have Gibson, Stolars, and Dostal, and that's the least of our worries, Eddie, with this team so far.
Yeah, and Stolarz, he made a lot of good saves in that Arizona game. Arizona wasn't a team that just came in there and kind of showed their belly and rolled over for the Ducks. It just Stolarz played a huge role in the saves that he made and shutting them down, taking their momentum away when they were in the zone. I was sitting where the Ducks defended twice, so I got to see like a lot of the saves that he made. It was just, this is probably the best game I've seen him play all season. You know, it's still young, and he's only played like minimal games this season, but he looked great. He looked outstanding, in my opinion, in that Arizona game. I think he's a solid and capable backup goalie, and I have no worries with him being in net. the games that were kind of iffy were those games where the Ducks weren't really fine. They didn't have their full-on groove and their swag they have right now. So that kind of played a contributing factor. But he looked good against Arizona. So I'm more than comfortable and confident when he's gets the nod to back up Gibson in the games that we can get a win.
Yeah, I don't. To me, it doesn't really matter at this point who's in net, whether it's Gibson or Stolarz. It doesn't. I think the biggest thing with this team is just really the forward lineup. And, you know, they proved that they could win this game. Like I said, no Silverberg, no Raquel, no Zegras. And so then you go in the last game that they had, Military Appreciation Night, against the Blues. The Blues were 7-1-1. So I thought the same thing. I thought, okay, we played one of the worst teams in the league. Now we're playing one of the best teams. What's going to happen? And a lot of you were thinking that too. They're like, okay, well, they're on a 3-game win streak. Blues are really hot. You know, what's going to happen? And, of course, they scored right away in the first 13 seconds. So I was like, oh, crap. Here we go. Are we going to get blown out or whatnot? But the Ducks didn't. They held their own. They ended up tying the game in the second period on a goal by Sam Carrick. And then in the third period, they took over. Troy Terry, like we talked about, he scores again on the power play. Sam Steele gets one. And Grew gets an empty net goal, his first NHL goal. Congrats to him. And the Ducks win this one 4-1. And again, without all those players, Zegras was out there for warm-ups, but he did not play. Silverberg still in COVID protocol, and Raquel is still out as of now. So, impressive. The Ducks had a 4-game homestand, and they won all 4 games. One of the worst teams, they beat the Coyotes, but then they came and beat one of the best teams, Eddie, the St. Louis Blues, who had only lost one game in regulation before they played the Ducks.
Yeah, and this was like one of the Ducks' biggest tests, and this is a game where people start taking the Ducks a little more seriously. The analysts have been seeing been commenting on the Ducks, their players. This was a really good game, and they really took it to the Blues. The Blues came out really hard. They played their asses off too, so it wasn't just an easy win. They kind of rolled over for them, so that was really good to see. We didn't see Jonathan Quick crying. Oh, I'm sorry. I mean Jordan Bennington. My bad on the name thing. They act the same. Little temper tantrums. We didn't see him really crying, but you know what? The Ducks really played a good job. This was by far my favorite win of the season because they played a really big powerhouse team. Even Crybaby Bennington has been a bounce back solid season, and Ducks just outplayed them in every level of the game, minus that first goal. But it's just Ducks didn't like hold back. They showed resiliency and they fought back. And once again, Terry just keeps going on a tear, and he just keeps scoring.
Yeah, absolutely. Terry's been on fire, and that kind of leads into our next section. You know, why are the Ducks turning things around? Why are they doing better? Well, one of the reasons has been Troy Terry. The guy has been just lights out. Him and Getzlaf have been playing well. He's got an 11-game point streak now, which is the longest currently in the NHL. And he's been on fire. I think he's been in the right place at the right time. His shooting percentage is like at 32%, which is stupid. I mean, he's not going to keep that up forever. But he's finding the right spot. Getzlaf's finding him. And he's just overall, he's upped his game. I think this is the guy that we'd looked for, you know, before. And it's just all worked out for him. I think part of it, too, is chemistry. You and I talk about that. Milano and Zegras were developing that. Obviously, Zegras is out now. Hopefully, he'll be back soon. But that's a big part of it. I know a lot of people talk about puck possession stats and advanced stats, plus minus, or they just talk about goals and assists or whatever. And don't get me wrong, all that stuff's important. But chemistry is important. And like I said, Terry and Getzlaf are playing well together. Zegras and Milano are playing well together. And you can see that on the ice, Eddie.
Oh, yeah. It's totally crazy. I think, I don't know if this plays a factor in it. I think when Bob Murray finally admitted that the Ducks are in a rebuild, I think it took a lot of pressure off the players and the team, and they can just go out there and knowing that that's their mentality, that they're rebuilding, they can go out there and just play loose, have some fun. not have all that pressure on them to kind of force things and force themselves to be a playoff team. Now they can go and just work on the fundamentals. They can take care of business. They can go out there. And you can see there's like a lot of weight off the players' shoulders. They're playing more of a loose game. This is like the most loose team I've seen in the past two seasons. And they all look like they're having fun with it. Just their emotion on their face when they score or they make a play. It's just something different about this team. And it's really fun to watch. And it really gets me so excited and poised for the future and what this team could become and what some of these players that, and even players that we haven't even seen step up yet. We have, Comtois hasn't even got a point. He's waiting to just to explode. And once he starts getting fire, this team's going to be dangerous again. Just a guy like that. So it's really fun to watch. Troy Terry, just I always had an eye on him, especially when he played for the University of Denver. I know Joe Sakic coached one of his teams, and he was really impressed with his skill level. So you catching the eye of a legend like Joe Sakic, obviously there's something right with him and something that he has. And he's found that magic this season. He found his touch, and I hope he just keeps trending upward. I don't know. Like, who knows? We could probably see him turn into a superstar. The way he's playing lights out. He's playing this way and keeps getting those points and keeps doing it. Who knows? Maybe there's a chance for him to make the Team USA roster come January.
Absolutely. And he's getting attention around the league. As you talked about just before we recorded the show, Kevin Weeks came out and said that he is the NHL's early season breakout player. Talked about Troy Terry being confident, assertive, and like we said, developing great chemistry with Ryan Getzlaf. So you have that there. From Kevin Weeks, you know, who's been covering some of these games on ESPN Plus. If you watch some of those, I started watching those. I had to go out and subscribe. I got to watch my team, right? So I had to end up doing that. I know some of you don't like ESPN Plus so much, but I know we talked about that in the last show. But yeah, I think he's really found a groove. He's in a rhythm. He's getting the goals. He's getting assists. I think that's been a big part of it. I think that the lineup is kind of starting to gel and get together. We get Zegras back. Things are looking good. This last game against St. Louis, the fourth line finally was playing a little bit better. You had Grant, Grew, and Carrick in there. They got two goals. Yeah, one of Grew's goals was an empty netter, whatever. But they're playing better. Their puck possession stats showed they're pretty lights out. They're one of the best lines on the night for the Ducks. So I thought that looked good as well. So we talked about lineup tweaks last time. You know, you mentioned Comtois has been having some issues. Steele's got three goals on the season, but it's been kind of hit or miss. I think the big thing here is really trying to get those guys going. I would put Comtois with Getzlaf and Terry and see how that works out. See if that can get him going, because Getzlaf and Terry have just been on fire lately, and see if that works. I like the line that they had of Henrik, Zegras, and Milano. That was doing pretty well. And for the, I guess the third line would be McTavish, Steele, and Lundstrom. And then your fourth line would be Grant, Grew, and Carrick. And then rotate between D'Lo and Grant. Or maybe you do throw Grant or D'Lo on the third line. But I would not put Comtois and Steele together. They've done that a couple times this season. I don't think that's going to work out. If you have two guys that aren't doing as well, you don't want to put them together. I would keep them separate. I'd also keep D'Lo and Grant separate. For some reason, when they're on the fourth line, that fourth line gets destroyed, especially in puck possession numbers. They just do extremely horrible, so I would not put them together either. I would either put one or the other in on the fourth line, and then if you're going to put them both in, then put the other on the third line. Those are just some of my tweaks for the lineup. Eddie, I don't know what you think, you know, as far as how they could do a little bit better. They've obviously found some things that are working, but I'm just trying to fine-tune it a little bit going forward.
Yeah, we have to get Comtois going. Whether put him on that top line with Getzlaf and Terry to spark something, he needs to get that monkey off his back. And once that monkey gets off his back, he's good to go. His style of play, he's up in your face. He can get in those dirty areas. He can win those battles. So once he just gets that monkey off his back, scores a goal, gets that point at least, his confidence starts going up. He starts getting more points consistently, and he'll be a dangerous factor to play with. I know a lot of people got mad about this lineup change when they had Zegras and Milano on, like when they had Zegras back on there. They had Zegras, Milano, and Delorier, but that goes to say, like, Zegras has been attacked numerous times. You want someone like Delore on the line. He led the league in fights a few seasons ago, and he's one of those guys that that kind of puts fear in other players. So you want him on that lineup, especially with that line with Zegras. I know a lot of people were complaining about that, but you have to know how hockey works. Like, if you have someone like Delore right there backing up Zegras and Milano, players are going to kind of think twice about taking runs at them. And if they are, you best believe they're going to have a consequence to deal with. And someone that led the league in fighting a few seasons ago, he knows how to fight. He can throw them here and there. He's not going to just back down and roll over and it's going to be an easy fight. No, you're going to be hurt. You're going to be hurting the next day. Yeah, not everyone wins every fight they get into, but still, he's going to make you earn that win if you want to drop the gloves with him.
Yeah, and there's something that they're going to have to figure out, too, down the road here with that, where they might have to tweak this lineup, because McTavish, with the Canadian junior rules and all that, if he's going to get sent back down, they're going to have to do something. They may have to put D'Lo in one of those spots. Leterrier's in the wings as well. They're going to have to figure some of that out and see what they're going to do. So that's something that they may have to consider, unless they're going to decide to keep McTavish up, which I don't see them doing that. But, it's definitely a good point. Like you said, you know, if you have him out there mixing up, you still have Zegras and Milano scoring. I still like them with Henrique personally. But if D'Lo's out there here and there with them too, I'm not necessarily opposed to that. And like you said, a lot of people are against D'Lo. I don't know what the deal is, why a lot of people hate on him so much. But he still plays an important role in this team. And he can chip in and score. We've seen it. Yeah, he had that hat trick, you know, only one time that we saw. But you just never know. He can provide some offensive punch as well. Of course, it's super inconsistent. I get it. But I'm not totally opposed to that. I think that's something that the Ducks might have to look at. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? It's going to be decision time, I think, coming up here soon, Eddie, when McTavish gets close to that 10 games.
Yeah, it's something you have to think about. And then you have Sam Steele. I know he said he's had a rocky start. He was he didn't make the opening night roster. Jones gets hurt. He got sick, non-COVID related. They put McTavish in over Steele, so I don't know if that affects his performance. I mean, it has to. You're a hockey player. You're a professional hockey player. You want to be part of the team. You want to be winning. You want to play. So I don't know if it's something there or what's going on, if he's in a doghouse with the coach or whatnot, but something has to get him, because he's a special player too, and he's one of those players where he can just have turn around and he could be kind of like the Troy Terry that I always harped on for a few seasons that we both did. We talked about how he is a special player and we're just waiting for him to break out. If you don't, you can't find a place with him in the lineup, and if you're going to keep McTavish up, maybe it's time to think about a trade then. A change of scenery might help him spark somewhere else. He's still young. He still has a lot of potential. We can get a good value for him. Those decisions you have to think about right now, like what you want to do with them. You can't just keep scratching him and keep him out of the lineup. His value is just going to go lower, especially if you keep a player like McTavish. You can't be scratching McTavish all the time. You need him to get those games, those experience. I can't see them keeping him up, but if he starts playing better or if they feel that they're a better team with him, then that might be a possibility. And they want to do a whole youth movement, and what better than keep up a kid that they just drafted? So it's going to be one of those things for the next few weeks. You're going to be, okay, what's going to happen? That 10-game mark comes up where he has to be sent down, or I can't see them keeping him up with a healthy roster and then not making a trade. It's just, you can't be sending these guys down that have been playing well either. Like Carrick has been like playing well. His energy just kind of boosts up the team. So it's going to be interesting to see what the Ducks do. And I think if they decide to keep him, there's going to be some kind of trade that's going to be made.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things kind of in the works, too, that we talked about. The Ducks are going to have to figure out in terms of trades and whatnot. They still, we had one fan question here. They asked about Gibson in here. We had Shaq to Max on Instagram asked about, you know, Gibson being moved or some kind of overhaul or whatnot. Well, this team still has to figure out something. We'll talk about Eichel a little bit later in the show, since that's pretty much done and gone. But we talked about the problem in the last show with this team. They're going to have to figure out what to do with Raquel, Lindholm, and Manson. They can't avoid that. I mean, that's the problem that's going to, you know, be kind of in the back burner that this team is going to have to figure out this season, because they're all going to be available at the end of the season. They're going to have to figure out, okay, what are we going to do? Who are we going to keep, right? Because you've got Manson and Lindholm. Manson at $4 million, Lindholm at just over $5 million. And then you got Raquel, who's now out hurt with a shoulder week to week, which is extremely unfortunate. And they're talking about all these players and the deals that they want and how much they're going to cost. Raquel's just under $4 million. So you've got these three guys that you've got to try to figure out here. Like you said, if you keep McTavish up as well, they also had Volkov that they terminated his deal, and he went to the KHL. He signed a four-year deal there, so you're without him. So there is going to be decision time for this team, and they're going to have to figure out what to do. The unfortunate thing now is they've got these three guys to look at, but the kind of that leverage that this team had last season to trade these guys is now gone. I mean, Raquel, sadly, like I said, is out again. But even if he comes back and he is fine, what are you going to do? Because these guys are UFAs. So basically, they're rentals at the end of the season. Unless they agree to sign, you know, a better deal with the team, or an extended deal with whichever team that they would get traded to. So the Ducks are going to have to figure this out. Everything's going well. They're winning right now. They're on a hot streak, even without also Silverberg and Zegras too, like we talked about. But something's got to give. They're going to have to figure this out. And I'm kind of nervous, because if the Ducks don't make some kind of trade by the trade deadline, I'm afraid they're going to lose somebody. Because I don't think, come the end of the season, that the Ducks will have Raquel, Manson, and Lindholm all on this team. I think they'll have one or two of those players, but I just don't see them having all three, Eddie, with how much that, you know, they're going to cost and what kind of term they're going to want for their contract extensions.
Exactly, and they're going to have to take a team-friendly deal if they want to stay, and I can't see Murray signing them for those large amounts that are going out there with other teams. So it's going to be, we have to wait and see what Murray does, where the Ducks are at that time. You definitely don't want to lose these players and not get anything in return. That's going to be tough. And I know they're all UFAs, but we've seen UFAs go for a lot at the trade deadline. Some of these teams really want to make a big push, and they'll overpay even for a UFA and not, you know, rights to keep them. And there's always conditional picks too if they don't re-sign. If they do re-sign, there's always that that option. It's going to be tough to see. It's hard to see. It's going to be hard to see Raquel and Lindholm just, like, separate it and split up, especially if they're both UFAs. I tend to see, like, both of them, since how close they are, them signing with the same team together. Like, I think Solani and Kreia did when they signed with the Avalanche. But, yeah, it's going to be a big decision. It's going to be an important trade deadline. It's going to be one of those trade deadlines where Murray just can't sit on his thumbs and just kind of trade, make minor league players, like small little trades that really haven't really panned out or going to be significant to the Ducks. So he has to do something and either sign these people to extensions. But like you said, I can't see all three of them staying with the Ducks. It's going to be too hard. So it's going to be one of those things where he has to try to work the little magic that he has, or trade him and get an overpayment, especially at the trade deadline. We've seen it numerous times. And why can't the Ducks be one of those teams to fleece a team and get something? It's funny to see in all these like chats and like Twitter, the Maple Leafs fans think that they're going to get Manson. They've been saying that for the last two seasons. So, like, they're really stuck on him. So, hopefully we can push them. And, I don't know, hopefully the Maple Leafs can trade for Manson and seriously overpay for him.
I mean, something's got to happen, like you said. I think that they've got to figure that out. Because if they let all three of these guys walk for nothing, they don't re-sign them or don't trade them, dude, that is some serious mismanagement. I mean,
and Murray will probably get a raise and an extension. Who knows? Like, owners love Murray like shit.
Exactly. I mean, they have to figure that out with these guys. And this kind of going back to what you said with McTavish, it plays into that too. Because if Raquel's out for a while now, you let Volkov walk. Jones is out 4 to 6 months with his chest issue. I talked about this on the last show. I've had a couple friends that had similar injuries to Jones. I don't think we're going to see Jones at the end of the season. I really don't. I mean, he could maybe come in there at the end, but when you have your chest muscle, like, you know, ripped up like that in the way he did, it's a lot. He had surgery already. There's staples that are put into your arm. I mean, there's a lot of rehab and stuff that has to happen. I'm not saying he won't come back, because both of my friends that had that happen to them, they did come back. But it was a lengthy process for them to get back to where they were at. It wasn't something that was that easy. So you're looking at Raquel out, Jones out, right? You're probably going to have to keep McTavish up now unless you make some kind of a trade, you know, with the way it's going. Zegras is now kind of iffy too. You're kind of running out, and then Silverberg's on this COVID thing. We don't even know what the heck's going on with that. He's been out for a week. I don't know more than just he's in protocol. Obviously, he's not feeling well because he hasn't been playing. He's not just tested positive. So there's something going on with him that they haven't really told us a whole lot about that as well. Which, oh, one thing I did want to bring up too. I know everybody kind of freaked out with the whole roster thing with Silverberg. So a couple things I found out. Some clarifications for you guys too when you're looking into this. If a player is removed off the team roster website, the NHL.com website, and then put back on, that happens from time to time. I don't know if you saw Adam Brady from the Ducks actually replied to one of my tweets about that, how that happens, but it's related to the NHL website. So sometimes something happens there. And that was the day before we found that he was put on the COVID protocol. Apparently, that happens with other players around the league. So sometimes that may happen. You may see a player taken off a roster and then put back on. It's a COVID protocol thing, and it's not told right away. It's just kind of a weird thing. So just something to keep in the back of your mind. But anyways, as far as this whole trade thing goes, the Ducks have to make some decisions, and they may have to make them sooner than later now because of this, because of Raquel, because of Silverberg, Jones being out. You've got to figure out what you're going to do with Raquel, Manson, Lindholm. But I think you're right, Eddie. If they want to try to send Manson to Toronto and get some kind of deal or something like that, I am with that. They need to figure out something. I honestly would think that the Ducks would try to make a trade before the trade deadline, not wait until the last minute. I mean, of the three, I don't want them to lose Lindholm. I think the Ducks should keep him. He's been solid. Don't trade him. Raquel's been the one that I thought that they should trade, but now he's injured. So I don't know how that's going to impact him. His value's probably gone down. I don't know. We'll have to see when it gets closer to the trade deadline. Maybe they're able to keep him for not as much. I don't know. That one's going to be kind of a question mark. And then Manson, it really depends, like you said. I think if there's certain teams that are really hot on him and they want to overpay, then go for it. I wouldn't want to see him go either. I think him and Lindholm have been great on the blue line. Manson a little bit streaky in the last couple seasons, but overall still pretty good. But something's got to give. That's the bottom line, Eddie.
Yeah, you know what? Like, Manson, too, I know he hasn't had that best of a season. He's been his injuries the last few seasons, too. But he's one of those players you just kind of need. He's that physical force, that player that you have to keep your head up when you're on the ice. And if you want to do something stupid, you're going to have to answer to him, too. And he's a big guy. He knows how to throw his body around. And he knows how to scrap, too. I would love for them to keep Manson. You know, it's hard. It's hard because we're both fans, too, so we grow that attachment to the players, like Raquel, Lindholm, Manson. They've been part of the Ducks for a while, and it's just I can't see them playing on another team. I know it's business. It's going to happen, and whatever makes the Ducks better. But I do like these players, so I really hope if something happens, they do get traded, that they have success somewhere else. Look at Kunitz. When he got traded, that was kind of hard for everyone to deal with. He was a fan favorite. But then he went ahead and won, three different Stanley Cups? That's pretty much good for him. You get to be happy for that guy. And he still has his role, his coaching with the – or he's a player consultant with the Blackhawks, fortunately with a shit organization right now. They're going through a lot. But still, he's having success still after that move from Anaheim. So – it's going to be interesting, and hopefully Murray, and I think I can disagree with you on this. Like, I really hope a deal gets done at the trade deadline when teams will overpay, and it'll be a little hectic, so they want to get a deal done fast. The only thing on that, and the flip side, is I don't really trust Murray with that kind of that hecticness, because we've seen him in the last few trade deadlines. He just didn't really do that well, and really – I guess he didn't really fleece other teams. It was fair, or it was a little bit of an underpayment. So,
yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. Trade deadline time is going to be, I think, crazy for the Ducks this year. There's going to be stuff they're going to have to figure out. So that's where we're at with this team. Some of the other things that we didn't really break down, but we kind of hinted at before, that's been going well with this team. The special teams, power play. They've gotten 12 power play goals in 44 attempts, 27%. They only had 11 power play goals last season and 124 attempts. So the power play is doing good. The penalty kill is at 85% efficiency, ninth in the league. And the Ducks have picked up their 5-on-5 play. Looks like they've got 28 goals now on 5-on-5 play. Their Corsi 4 and Fenwick 4 stats are up to almost 48%. They were in the low 40s before, so they made a jump there, and they're averaging over 3 goals a game. So a lot of positive stuff with this team. They're going in the right direction despite the injuries, despite obviously some of these things that we're talking about they're going to have to figure out come trade deadline. But this team is we said they were going to be fun to watch, that they were going to be competitive, and that's exactly what we got. They're actually in playoff contention right now. Are you a little surprised by that, Eddie? I know some people are still cautiously optimistic about this team, but what's your thoughts overall as they're going through this 4-game win streak?
Well, the Ducks always had a decent start to start the season. It just, can they handle this and sustain this, the 82 games that they're going to have to play? Ducks have had injury problems before, which they're dealing with, and it's really good to see that we have some of our top six players injured and everyone else is stepping up to that role and really finding their groove. Thing is, like, are we going to see this team be the same level come that last game? If they do make the playoffs, are we going to trust our GM enough to bring in players that are going to help push the Ducks over that edge? We've seen other teams that have powerhouses. Look at Vegas. Once they get healthy and once they figure out their cap space, they're going to have one of the deadliest lines in the league with Stone, Pacioretty, and Eichel. You think the Ducks can compete with someone like that when they bring in their grit and their speed and their talent? Yes, we're seeing players step up. We're seeing the Ducks play pretty amazing and playing well. I'm trying to be a realist here. I'm not just trying to be like a straight fan. Because, yeah, I would love to see the Ducks make a Cinderella run, which we'll talk about that word a little later. But it's going to be hard to grind out an 82-game season. We saw Montreal do it last season, but it was different. They played in the All-Canadian League. They played well, and they relied on their goaltender, Carey Price. So if Gibson could get hot in the playoffs, and he can steal games, but it's just the playoffs is a different beast. It's going to be grinding. It's going to be – you have a lot of these players that are still new that haven't experienced that, and you're going to have to rely on experience too, not just just talent. It takes a lot to win the Stanley Cup. It's not just X, Y, and Z. It's going to be the whole alphabet to win the Stanley Cup. So I want to be optimistic, and I want to see the Ducks, I want to see them win. I want to see them lift the cup again, just like everyone else does, but I don't want them to go in the playoffs, get bounced off the first round, or squeak by the first round to get bounced off the second round, and then what? We get a lower draft pick, and we're rebuilding, and then we lose guys like Manson, Lindholm, Raquel, and we don't get anything in return because we're in a playoff position come trade deadline, so we're not gonna trade them. And something happens where they want the money that they deserve that they can get, and Murray doesn't want to pay them, and it's just we're back to square one. Just for what? For one season? No, I don't want that. I want us to build that dynasty of a team. I want them to be competitive every single season. We don't have to talk about if we're going to make playoffs, but I want to talk about the intention when we make the playoffs. I follow the Avalanche shoot every season. For the last few seasons, they're in a contender. They're one of those teams that are going to win the Stanley Cup, the roster they have, and I want that for the Ducks. I want every season we talk about them that they're going to win the Cup, their favorite to win the Cup. I want all these analysts just to show some respect to the Ducks, like, and talk about them, like, oh, the Ducks are the powerhouse team. Like, look at all this attention they're getting right now. Gibson was named one of the third stars this week. Troy Terry's been mentioned by every analyst. Well, I want to say Leah Hextall, but never mind. She didn't even know Aslani lived in Anaheim or lived in the Anaheim area. She still, Man, that's what I'm talking about. Like ESPN, I love Kevin Weeks. Weeks is amazing, but she needs to learn. She needs to learn her game. Our ESPN needs to just get the hell off the air. Like they're terrible. Everyone was so excited to get them. I think they're like one of the worst things that happened to hockey, and then she just proved it. Like it's like not the first mistake she's made either. It's just annoying to see that. Come on, like do your homework. You're getting paid to do this. Like that's your profession. You think you'd be at least decent at it. Man, I'd rather mute games and listen to ESPN, though. Man.
Yeah, that's what a lot of you have been complaining. I've been watching the chat. A lot of you have not been happy with ESPN Plus. You've not been happy with Bally Sports, too. A lot of you have complained about different things from different people. And I just kind of sit back and kind of I'm like that kid at the bench at the mall, just kind of watching the crowd walk by, and I'm just cracking up at all your guys' comments because a lot of you are just upset. I have mixed feelings. I mean, for me, the ESPN thing, I'm with you. Kevin Weeks knows his stuff, obviously. What makes me mad, I post on Twitter, is they don't have a pregame show. So it's like I have to sit there and wait till like 2 minutes before puck drop to see what they're going to say and what's going on. I do like that about Bally Sports. They have their half-hour pregame show. I like to sit on there. They talk about who's injured, what's the lineup. You know, they have some player interviews or coach interviews or whatever. They at least do all that stuff where ESPN Plus, as I called it ESPN Minus, they don't have any of that. It's just last minute. Kind of irritates me. And then in one of the games, Lundstrom scored, and they're like, oh, yeah, number 21 in black scored. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me right now? And like, and I get it. They're covering different teams and all that stuff. But look at the damn sheet and see 21's Lundestrom and say his name. Why are you saying 21 in black is... it just kills me. And I mean, I get it. The Ducks guys cover the team the whole year, so they know who they got and whatever. But they still got to focus on the other team. So that kind of irritated me. And then, yeah, the comments about Teemu flying from Finland, which, I mean, yes, he did have to come over here and do some stuff and things like that, back and forth, but he has a house here, too, and I saw a lot of you commenting on that on Twitter, and I was cracking up. I'm just like, I don't know. That part kind of bugs me, too, because it's like you're making these comments, and you don't even know that that's going on. It just sucks because you're out of touch. You don't know a player by the name. You don't know what number he wears. You don't know that a guy lives here and there. I mean, I get that. It's kind of frustrating on my stance. So, as far as how she does during the show, Hextall, I mean, I think she does okay. I don't think she's horrible. Everyone like blows her up. I don't think she's that terrible. It's just when she's announcing stuff, she just doesn't seem as into it. I don't know. That's just what I get is my feeling. I mean, you know, Ahlers is into it, right? Hayward's into it. Yeah, they say some stupid shit once in a while. I know. They do. It is what it is. But we all do. We all say stupid stuff. I mean, it's just the way it is. We make mistakes or say things and then, you know, we're like, oh, crap, I need to go look that stat up or whatever. But when you don't know a player's name and you're saying so-and-so in a black jersey scored, that's kind of bad. I'm sorry. That's bad. That's my issue, Eddie.
No, I don't. I can't agree with you more. When I heard that, I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, you know what, ESPN, like, I can't. I don't expect anything better from them. I think they're trash. And I think it's horrible to the sport. That's your job. If I go into my job right now and I half-ass it and I don't know what I'm doing, I'm probably going to get fired. Like, it's just, like, I just can't believe the incompetence of them doing that. It's just, it's annoying. Like, a lot of people just, I'm not going to blow her up. I'm not going to be, like, I think it's, like, sucks too, fans. If you're one of those people, you should stop. Don't be tagging her and blowing her up and talking shit. That's just, like, that's not cool. Don't be a troll. Just, you don't like her, you don't like her. I'm talking about it right now. I'm not going to go tag her. And it's just, like, I think she's doing a horrible job, her job announcing. They can bring in someone else if they want to have diversity and bring in a female. There's a bunch of other analysts that I've heard talk that are more competent and that can do a way better job than she can. One, the NHL Network analyst, I think Catherine Tappan, has done an amazing job. It's just someone that can do the job right and not just, I don't know. I just don't think she's doing great at all. It just sucks that when we have to watch the games on ESPN, I won't even watch other games, and I love watching hockey, but I won't even turn on another game if I see it from ESPN. I'd rather just not watch anything. It's just annoying. So it's just when the Ducks like are on ESPN or the Hulu Live, same thing. I'm just annoyed, like, oh, I'm gonna have to mute the game or something. It's just, it's not fun.
Well, you know what some of you have done out there, and I did it too for these last games. I just muted and I put on Dan Wood and Steve Carroll. I mean, honestly, they're my favorite out of everybody. I just put them on and I listen to them, you know, and hear what they have to say. I know they answer our questions. I'm a little biased at their Ducks cues and whatnot, but no, but in all honesty, like, take that out of it. I just listen to them. I always like hearing them. I know that they're going to say everything and get it right, you know, and I know that they prepare hard. I know Phil Hewlett prepares hard. A lot of times we talk about that. Phil and I will talk before games about certain players, how you pronounce their names and whatnot. I'm looking up stuff, listening to audio and stuff like that because, you know, you want to make sure you get it right and whatnot. And, I mean, that's your job, like Eddie was talking about. So, you know, there are only a handful of games on there, fortunately. So you have Bally Sports for most of the time. But, hey, I know some of you don't like Bally Sports either. So if you don't, then mute that and listen to Dan Wood and Steve Carroll. So there you go. we went up on a tangent on that one. But we did talk about that on the last show and some of you were concerned. So another thing that you guys were really revved up about lately was when Getzlaf beat Tamu for the all-time point leader. Oh my God, people were going nuts. I saw people that were still like, nah, Tamu's the best, like Getzlaf's whatever, and then, you know, Getzlaf's all-time greatest player, but no, Tamu is and Korea is. And I was sitting on that my little park bench at the mall, and I'm sitting there watching you guys post all your stuff on social media, and I'm just laughing, man. Seeing you guys battle it out over this stuff, I'm like, you guys are missing the point. The point is Getzlaf's a great player. Okay, Tamu's a great player too. You can argue all day who you think's better. I really don't care. They're both great players. You have to look at it a little bit differently, though. Korea was the one that got this team going and was the heart of this team. Yeah, he left on bad terms, Stanley Cup. I know, but he was the one getting this team going, right? Tamu then carried the torch. Now Getzlaf's carrying the torch. That's what's going on. If you like one more than the other or don't like the other one or whatever, hey, okay, fine. You guys can go debate that all you want. I'm going to sit on my park bench at the mall, and I'll watch you guys walking by arguing about this. I don't know why, but people are going nuts about this. This is not what I expected. As soon as Getzlaf past Tamu, it was like a nuclear meltdown on social media. It's like, oh my God, who's the best Duck and yada, yada. Dude, calm down. They're both great players. You know, Getzlaf should have his banner up there too. And so I put out a question on Facebook, and I made it this way on purpose. I said, who's your top five? Because to me, you can't say top one or two. This, you can't limit it to that. So I did a top five. I'll ask Eddie what his are in just a sec. But the results from you guys, you had number one was Tamu Solani, shocker. Number two was Perry, which I was surprised. Three was Jaeger, four was Korea, and then it was a tie for fifth between Getzlaf and Scott Niedermayer. So I thought that was interesting. I thought Getzlaf would have been a little higher and Perry a little bit lower, but that was what you guys voted on. I think those six are all in that discussion, but I did it just to kind of see what you guys would think and put out there. Like I said, no surprise, Solani number one. But what do you think, Eddie? I had the same as this. I didn't have Perry that high up there. That was the only thing I had him. It was more between Perry and Niedermayer for fifth for me personally. What did you think about these results, or what do you think are the top five?
I think what you put on our script, and I if you didn't put this, I probably would have put it myself. I think it's Solani, Korea, Getzlaf, Jaeger, and Scott Niedermayer. If you want to flop Getzlaf and Jaeger, so Solani, Korea, Jaeger, Getzlaf, Niedermayer, I think I'd put it in that order. And that'd be my top five right there. Getzlaf has done a lot for this organization. He's been here, like I said, he's been here since the beginning of his career. He's going to hit that 1,000-point mark. He passed Solani, which Solani was really happy about him, and wearing his jersey too over there when they honored him against the game against Arizona. But it just we should just take a moment and realize how lucky we are to have players like this a part of our organization. A lot of teams haven't had players like this. I think Getzlaf is a tremendous captain and a great leader and a great pillar for the community. And he's just one of those players that just puts the team first, has that mentality where it's just like, you know, one of those old school hockey players, like the remaining ones that just, that the team first guy, he puts the players, his team and everything. He knows what it is to be a captain. And I think he's one of the top fives for me. Like I said, it says Solani, Kariya, Jagr, Getzlaf, and Niedermeyer would be round up my top five. And I know Niedermeyer didn't play a lot for the Ducks. He was kind of fairly new out of all these players. But still, he came in and he just played the game how he knew how to play. His caliber, he's probably the best defenseman we ever had. And he helped us win a cup. Without him, I don't think we would have had a cup in Anaheim.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you. I just crack up. You guys battle this stuff out on social media, and it just blows my mind. I'm like, I did not expect that. Like, oh my God, who's better, Getzlaf or Solani? I'm like, really? Like you said, just take a step back. Be grateful that we had these guys on this team. I mean, you have Solani that's like loved by everybody on the face of this planet, you know, and Getzlaf's up there too. I mean, he's great. He's done a lot of great things for the community. He's been this captain for a bazillion years. He decided to come back this year. He didn't have to. He could have gone off to another team to try to win a cup, and he decided to stay. That's pretty unselfish. You know, I mean, he's still with the team. I mean, I don't know what he's going to do at the end of the season. Maybe he will at that point and it'll change. I don't know. But we're grateful for having these players, and the Ducks ending up getting a cup. Hopefully they do get a second one. So I'm happy with that. I think that all those players, no matter who you talk about, all of them have won a cup with the Ducks, minus Kariya. Obviously, Kariya only being one game away, but really being the face of the franchise early on. So you can't dismiss that as well. So nothing that you could do wrong with that. But, you know, it's kind of funny because you talked about that Cinderella story, and I mentioned Kariya, and we had that the Mighty Jersey on Instagram asked us, you know, can the Ducks repeat a Cinderella story like the 2002-03 season this year? And, I mean, for me, it would be great. I think that they, you know, if they did it, it would be fantastic. But being the realist I am, I don't think they will. And I think if they did, it would be exciting but frustrating at the same time, Eddie, because if the Ducks did keep on winning, which obviously I want them to do that, and they look great right now, but if they did that and then got bounced, you know, even in the second or third round of the playoffs, and then cost them at getting another quality draft pick, would it be worth it to do that playoff run this year, knowing they're not going to win at all and get bounced out? Obviously, we can't predict the future. We don't know. But I don't want them to do that. I don't want them to make the playoffs and go far and then just get bounced out and then get screwed out of the pick. I'd rather it be next season that they really push forward. But there's a lot of stuff that they've got to figure out too. Like we've said, there's a lot of injuries going on right now. There's players that are going to be UFAs they've got to figure out. So there's still a lot of question marks with this team. But could they repeat it? I think, yes, they could. But I don't want them to, if that makes sense, Eddie.
Yeah, that's a really good question. As much as I really want them to, you made some really good points. This team's rebuilding, and we have to like keep that in our mind. Regardless of the early success we're having right now, we're still a rebuilding team. I can't recall the last rebuilding team that won a Stanley Cup that had those superstars. Yeah, there's been those outliers. You had Montreal, one of those teams that weren't supposed to go. They almost won it last year. But then if you go to the Stanley Cup final, you face a team like Tampa, a stacked team like that, that's just going to come out there and just blow you away. Well, I mean, what's the point right now for rebuilding and we losing that draft pick? And then, like I said, we're back from square one come next season when we lose players and not getting anything in return because we wanted to make a run. It's just, there's too many factors that goes into it right now. There's too many moving parts. We should just stick to what we're doing right now. It's working. You see the improvement in the Ducks. And imagine if we get that higher draft pick come next draft, and we come back even stronger with our players had that extra year of experience under their belt. Our rookies have that year of hockey under their belt. We get the guys in San Diego that are playing well right now, and get them a year experience, and we go from there. We'll have some more cap space when Kessler gets off the books next season too. We can make a bigger splash and try to bring that quality top end player, a superstar player, a caliber that we kind of need, that a lot of teams have been doing. Like I said, you have Vegas, you even have the St. Louis Blues. Yeah, we beat them, but they have some quality superstar players on their roster, and on paper they have a better roster than the Ducks. We have to start thinking like that. We can't just focus on what we're doing right now early in the season. We have to look at the bigger picture, and it's just as much as I want to see it, yes, I do, but I have to think like a realist, and I have to like want the best for my team. I don't want one fluke season, and then come next season, we're just back in the same situation. It's not going to work for me. I'm a person that wants perfection in everything I do, and the team that I want to cheer for, which I'm going to cheer for regardless if they're dead last or not. Obviously, I'm still over on the podcast even after the last few seasons. But I know they can be better. I've seen the players, and I'm seeing the way this team is getting molded now, how loose they're playing and how they're improving in all these categories, and how these players that we have are stepping up. They're just going to keep trending upward, and they're going to be that powerhouse team once again. And it's going to be every season we're going to be competing for a cup, not just thinking or hoping that we're going to do it.
I agree. That's the thing. I mean, if they go on a Cinderella story run and they win the whole thing, then am I going to take it? Of course I'm going to take it. But of course, we're not saying that. But I just, the probability of them doing that this season, I just don't see it. I think that they like what they're doing now. It's early. Yes, they're missing some players. They're beating some teams. They're on a winning streak. Could they now make the playoffs? Now are we more in a better position? Yes, of course they are. At the way things are right now, it's a long season. You know, I don't know. I just, if they get in there and get bounced out right away, I'm just not a big fan. So, but yes, I what I'm liking right now is the way they're playing, how competitive they are, and what's been going on with the team so far. They're going more in the right direction. So I like what I'm seeing so far. We didn't talk about the goals too much, but they started to win some games finally. They beat Tucson 5-1. They beat Bakersfield in a shootout 3-2. You know, kind of winning, losing some games. McTavish was down there, got a goal and some assists. So they're playing a little bit better too. The Ducks, you know, obviously sending some players down there. You got Perreault doing pretty well as down there with 3 goals. So San Diego's doing a little bit better. I think they're going to have more of a rougher haul at this point. It seems like the Ducks, with these players out, it's going to affect the goals big time, because like we said, Volkov's gone. Jones is out for a long time. If he comes back, it'll be at the very end of the season. If anything, Zegras is having some issues. Raquel's having some issues. Silverberg, we don't know. So I wouldn't expect too much from the goals right now, sadly. I mean, I'm glad that they're starting to win a couple games here, but I think it's going to be a tough situation for them, Eddie, because when it you know, defensively the Ducks are fine, but when it comes to the forwards, we're having some issues right now, and they're going to might have to pull some players from down there, or like you said, they're going to have to maybe pull the trigger and make some kind of trade.
Oh, definitely, yeah. It's especially if we have a few more injuries and we're really gonna hit that bottom barrel right there. We're gonna have to really figure out what we want to do. You don't want to keep plugging to take it away from the goals and having their season just spiral down and then be out of it before they can like climb back in it. Yeah, we have Perreault doing well. He has 8 points, and then Tracy has 5 points. But do you really want to ruin their progression and kind of rush them and force them up on the lineup because you have injuries and kind of take away from their hot streak right now, what they're doing in San Diego. So just hopefully we get Raquel, we get Silverberg back soon, and we go from there. We figure out what we're going to do with McTavish, if we want him to go down and develop. I don't know if that will really work for him, or if he's, you know, more capable of developing to a better player, staying up with the Ducks. But it's just unfortunate, and I wish they would change that rule. I wish that like these players can go down in the AHL if they like just qualify and they can play in the AHL. Like last season, that was good about the whole COVID schedule, is these players that normally wouldn't be able to play in the AHL were able to play, And I think that really pushed up their development even better. So I just, that's one of those rules that I want to change. And I believe we had a question by Al Klaus that asked, what's one NHL rule you like change, or if there's a new rule you'd create? Well, a new rule I would create, just thinking off the top of my head right now, is that rule. Like if one of those Canadian rules, those players that are under that age, but they can play in the American Hockey League in that professional environment, then why not let them play? Just like last season, I think it worked out for a lot of, like, not just the Ducks players, but a lot of other rookies that had their players go down to the AHL and play in that professional atmosphere. And it just, I don't know, it could help their, it helped them better. It's just, they're either too good to play in the CHL or down in the Canadian junior leagues, but they're not good enough to play in the NHL. So it's just like, I don't really know what that does for their development. I think it'd be better if they were able to play in the AHL and have just kind of that, you know, that professional and get the use of that grinding schedule and the life of being a professional NHLer. I think that would help just push their development even further.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because it's, you know, what rule would you change or create a new rule? And I'm with you on that, too. The rule's kind of annoying, because you're kind of putting NHL teams, you know, in a bind here with these junior players in the Canadian Hockey League. So, I don't like that. I think that they should be able to have a little bit more leeway, like you talked about, whether it's, you know, changing an existing rule or creating a new rule, however that fits in that question. But that's something that's got to be addressed, I think. Because like you said, last year with everything going crazy, they're allowed to amend that a little bit, and I like that. The other thing I don't like is the no helmet rule on the ice. If you don't have that, then you have to skate back to the bench. We saw that happen a couple times with the Ducks this season. I don't like that at all. You know, because it can really screw stuff up on the play. I think it's not that big of a deal if a guy's helmet somehow comes off. You know, if he intentionally rips it off outside of a fight and throws it on the ground, that's one thing. But, I mean, if for some reason it comes off, it comes off. I mean, it happens. I don't know. I think that's another one that I would change, Eddie.
Yeah, I don't like the instigator rule. You get two additional minutes if you're instigating a fight. It's like so dumb, but I know the league's trying to change and trying to shy away from fighting, which I think it's just one of those things that are cancerous. And hockey is special because of that aspect of the game. But I know everything's changing, so they're trying to kind of regulate the fights more. But I think it's so dumb. And then some of these 10-minute misconduct rules, if I think some of those, like what they call them, doesn't make sense at all. You're fighting and something happens, or if you're, I don't know, if you say something rude and they give you a 10-minute misconduct right away, it's like, come on, guys. They're grown-ass adults. They both engaged in a physical altercation. Let them go. If I don't get how it's like some refs will call a misconduct, a 10-minute misconduct, and other ones will just give you that 5 minutes for fighting. It's just, I think that's the most, that's so stupid. It makes zero sense, and you're just taking off a player for 15 minutes of the game instead of just that 5 minutes for fighting. Like I said, they're all adults. Now, if someone's accosting someone and wailing, okay, obviously, yeah, throw them that 10-minute misconduct. But if two combatants are willing to go, ditch that instigator rule, ditch that misconduct rule, and just let them go. Just let them fight. It's just part of the game. One more thing, too, that just popped that we're talking before we got on the show. Like international rules, like those hash marks with the goalies, I wouldn't mind seeing them taken off during preseason and seeing how that goes. Let the goalies kind of have free range back there when controlling the pucks. You'll get more scoring. Goalies will take more chances and misjudge things. They won't get back to their crease. You'll have an easy empty net goal right there. If you want to increase scoring, there you go. Just remove those hash marks and let the goalies have those like kind of free range behind the net.
Yeah, I'm with you on the fighting stuff. I think a lot of that stuff, a lot of the stuff's subjective anyways, but those ones especially, I don't know. The instigator and the 10-minute, you know, when it comes to fighting and stuff, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that needs to be more streamlined or altered or what, but it does get irritating when, like you said, sometimes a player gets a 10-minute and another one doesn't. You know, like, what the heck? What, like, I don't know, those 10-minute misconduct penalties just seem very, very weird to me. I don't really understand, like, what's the criteria exactly sometimes. It just seems like it's kind of up to the ref. And then, yeah, the trapezoid thing would be interesting, too, if they did go back to the way that they were and may increase scoring chances as well. So, yeah, I mean, that's a good question. Definitely, there's always some rules that we'd like changed and whatnot. with the league. So I appreciate that one. With that, we'll get to the last section of the show. We'll talk about our league news. Just a couple things in here. The last time we will, well, maybe not forever, but the last time we'll talk about trading Eichel, right? Because we know it didn't happen for the Ducks. But finally, the Eichel drama is over. He ended up getting traded to the Vegas Knights. Buffalo got Krebs, Tuck, 2022 first-round pick, a 2023 third-round pick. And then Vegas got Eichel and also a third-round pick. So they kind of swapped third-round picks in there. But, you know, the news broke and people went nuts. And, again, I'm sitting on my park bench or my bench at the mall watching you guys all go crazy on this. And I'm cracking up. But a lot of you felt like Buffalo got screwed in this, that they, you know, could have done better, whatnot. And I don't necessarily disagree. I think Buffalo really screwed up in terms of the surgery stuff with Eichel. And I think the longer that this, you know, kept going on and on and on, it kind of limited their choices. So it was interesting. We heard that the Flames were possibly in on this. Carolina was in on this. And Vegas as well, obviously, because they got the trade. It sounds like the Ducks kind of bowed out a little bit earlier from what they were saying. Murray wanted the surgery to be completed to see, you know, how Eichel was after that. Also, we knew that if the ask was for Zegras or Drysdale, he said no. So, you know, I'm okay with that part. What the Ducks, you know, I didn't want them to trade those guys. I didn't want this to be an iffy thing. But it was funny because we talked about McTavish at first and then either Comtois or Steele for this. And I thought, oh man, would that even be enough? Well, I don't know. Maybe that might have been enough, Eddie. I mean, you take out the swap of the third round picks, that might have been something that would have worked out. I don't know if people would have gone for that if they would have done McTavish and a first for Comtois or Steele for Eichel. I mean, there's still some question marks as to what he's going to do or how he's going to perform after the surgery. But that's not as bad as we thought. I mean, we kind of were wondering if they were going to want more. And it seems like that, shit, they might have taken that kind of an offer.
Yeah, you know what? I would have taken that offer with the third round pick too. McTavish, a first, Steele or Comtois, and that third. I think that's a fair trade. I think the Ducks would have fleeced Buffalo a little bit on that one. You're taking a chance on a potential. If he comes back, he's a top 10 player in the league. He's a superstar, regardless if you like his attitude or not. I don't personally like his attitude, but his skill level, he's your number one center. If that trade would have happened, for McTavish, and you have Zegras that bumps out into your number two center. You have a 1-2 punch down the middle, and all of a sudden, You're projected up to that playoff team with a guy like Eichel on there, as a healthy one that can come back and perform to his capabilities. I don't personally think that would have done it. I know there was a fake rumor, and I know the Flames got upset per Elliot Freeman when Kevin Weeks tweeted out that Matthew Tkachuk, a former first round pick, and two prospects were part of that thing. Apparently, it wasn't. It was just one of those things where they leaked information out that was false. Obviously, the analysts are doing their job and they're putting information out they hear. The Flames got upset about that, but it kind of just pushed the fact that Vegas offered Krebs, which they didn't want to at first. That was one of the players that they wanted to retain. He's a player, I want to say he's on Zegras' caliber. He's one of those players that's going to be a franchise kind of player that you want. He could play the wing and he could play the center as well. I really think that if the Ducks would have got Buffalo interested, it would have had to be seeing what Vegas gave up and ignoring that false rumor about the Flames. It had to be Zegras, Raquel, or Silverberg, or Comtois, which you put up there too, a first-round pick and a second-round pick, or maybe a third, but I think that second-round pick, it would have been good for Buffalo. And that first-round pick that Vegas did trade is top 10 protected. So if Vegas gets a top 10 pick this season, that first round goes to next season. But I think if the Ducks would have got Buffalo interested, and if they were interested even before he had his surgery, I think Zegras would have had to be. That's a deal-breaker. You're not going to trade. Buffalo wasn't going to do a deal with the Ducks if it didn't involve Zegras. And like you mentioned before, McTavish and that first – No, I think that would have been like cool for Ducks fans. That would have been cool for myself. That'd have been cool for everyone. And I think Buffalo would have underpaid a little bit. Now if McTavish just blows up and be a superstar, then you pretty much traded a superstar for a superstar. Maybe it'd have been an overpayment, but I think that would have been a fair trade. But I think if anything would have got the wheels rolling, it had to be Zegras or Drysdale, which, like I said, the Ducks, like you mentioned too, the Ducks weren't going to part ways with either of them. So it is what it is. He's gone. He's over there in Vegas. It's not going to be a loss. You're going to hear from him now. The pressure's on him. The pressure's on Vegas. Vegas is trading away all their future assets and their future draft picks because they want to win a cup. Go figure, it's only fitting that Vegas gambles on situations like this to win a cup. So if it works out for them, great. If not, then a lot of questions are going to be asked with upper management and how they pretty much gambled away their future and nothing to show for it.
Yeah, and then the other problem with this too is their salary cap's going to be a mess because you have Eichel at $10 million on the LTIR. You have Stone just under $10 million on the LTIR and Pacioretty at $7 million. I mean, they're going to have to figure something out when these guys are all healthy because the math doesn't add up. So they're going to have to do something. They're going to have to do some kind of trades or something to kind of figure this out because they can't. They're going to be over. I don't know what they're gonna do when all these
$10.3 million. That's a lot of money. You're out of the. Now you're going to jeopardize your second line or your top nine players, but it's just, that's a lot of money to be over $10.3 million, unless you're going to try to do with the, thinking he's going to be unhealthy until the playoffs start and you're going to have him come the first round of the playoffs. But I don't know. It's going to be tricky. It's going to be interesting to see what they do to fix their salary cap, their issue right there. 10.3, that's a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah, they're going to have to figure that out. And the only thing that kind of bums me out, I'm not really, like, the Ducks not getting Eichel. I'm kind of like, whatever. You know, I didn't want to give up Zegras or Drysdale. I'm kind of with you. If it was McTavish or first Comtar still, that wouldn't have, like, killed me. But, like, they had to trade to someone in our division. It's like, couldn't you guys have traded to somebody in the Central or some other division? Like, why did you have to trade to the Pacific, really? Like, I think the only thing worse would have been if Eichel went to the Kings or something. It's like, God, why? That was, like, the one thing. I'm like, really? You have to send him to Vegas? I mean, I mean, I'll be a little bit excited because, I mean, I do plan to go to more Knights games in the future because I go to Vegas here and there, and I know you do, and we can probably catch some. So it'll be fun to kind of see him over there, but if he comes back and he's totally fine and then he's in our division, like, damn it, man. Like, what, you know, why you got to do that to us? So, I mean, that's where we're at. I mean, that's the end. Thank God. We don't have to sit here and deal with this anymore. I still think Buffalo effed up this thing royally. They should have got him the surgery and the stuff that he needed way earlier. And then they could have figured it out and they could have traded him and probably got more, I think. I don't think they got completely hosed in this trade like some people are saying, but I definitely think they could have done better. So, but anyways, it's over. The Ducks are, you know, that part as far as trying to get anybody is done. I don't know if they're gonna go around and look for anybody else. We had one other question. We had I think we talked about this on the last show. They were talking about Kratzoff from New York, if the Ducks would go after him. That was from Fat Like Kessel is the name. Yeah, Fat Like Kessel on Instagram asked, and I think we talked about him. I don't know if the Ducks will try to pick up somebody like that. Kind of a risk. I mean, he's gotten 3 points in one game in the minors right now. He only had a couple goals with the Rangers last season. It's kind of hit or miss. I don't know if the Ducks will try to go out and get another forward. I think, you know, there's just a lot of questions there. I really want to know what's going on with Silverberg. Hopefully Raquel comes back. I think Zegras will come back. I mean, he was at warm-ups in the Blues game, so I don't think that's too bad. But it'll be interesting, you know. And like I said, Jones being out for a while too. So the Ducks are going to have to figure out some stuff. Obviously, this one's dead in the water. And they're going to have to just move on from there. And that's what I'm kind of concerned about with this team. They're playing well without these guys, but long-term, I hope these guys get back. It just, unfortunately, always seems like injuries are something that plagues this team. With that, a couple more things to wrap up. I guess the big thing lately, you kind of touched on earlier in the show, Eddie, is the Blackhawks. You want to talk about a team that's a mess? Holy crap. They had the whole thing come out with Kyle Beach, and what a mess. And this affected Quenneville, too, him stepping down. So a lot of stuff going on with the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah, it's just a big mess over there. I feel bad for Marc-Andre Fleury. He has to die. Poor guy's having a really horrible start to his first season with the Blackhawks. They're having a horrible season too. They fired just their coach. They fired their assistant coaches, which included Sheldon Brookbank, which played for the Ducks before. They're just spiraling down. And I you know what? Good for them. I don't care what you do. I understand. I worked in law enforcement. I worked as an MP when I was in the Army. I get people commit crimes and they do stupid shit. But sexual assault, stuff like that, I'll never understand. And you're an ultimate piece of shit if you do that. And if you sit there and hide the fact that that happened and let this guy go out and work at a high school and give him recommendation for him to go and work other places and continue his sexual, his predator the instincts, and you deserve what you're getting right now. It's not fair for the players that are dealing with this right now that didn't know that just got traded over there, or the coach that got fired because of how poor they've been playing. It's really unfortunate, and you swept something under the rug just to win a championship, and that's just I don't think you're a true champion if you do that. I just think, yeah, on paper and on the cup, you guys won the cup, but you guys pretty much sacrificed your soul for that. And I'm one of those people where winning's a lot to me, and I try to win, but it's just to an extent, and I would never condone or ever allow that stuff to happen and let me sweep it under the rug on that. I think that's the most disgusting thing you can possibly be in life, and I'm glad that these people either stepped away from the position, or they felt guilty enough where they felt like they had to resign because they knew something was wrong, or what they did was wrong, and it's going to come out anyways. But still, I hope that Kyle Beach, I hope he gets the competition that's coming to him. I hope he gets the help and he can move forward from this. And I'm glad that he came forward and he publicly announced that he was the one that endured that. It's not hard to. It's probably one of the most hardest things he had to come out and say. So I wish him all the best, and whoever's involved, shame on them. And I hope they get what's coming to them. And I wish nothing but death on any of them. Like I'll be that dark and say that far. I just think, like I said, sexual assault and stuff like that, you're the biggest piece of shit in the world. So I don't hold back on that.
Yeah, this is frustrating for me, the fact that it happened in like 2010 or around there they were talking about, and then nothing. Like, that's what bothers me. I have no love for the Blackhawk organization. I felt that they've done some shady stuff in the past before and other things as well, and this is just ridiculous. But if you follow stuff, you talked about law enforcement, there's a lot of, I guess, I don't know if it's necessarily, I guess you would say it's good news, but there are people out there like this, and they're getting caught, you know, that are doing this despicable stuff, and they're getting arrested all across the planet for different things like this, different kind of sexual assaults and trafficking type things and stuff like that. I mean, I say it's bad probably because that is happening, but the good part is that a lot of people are getting busted for this stuff. So I'm with you. Whatever Chicago's got coming to them, bring it on to them. So I'm not going to spend too much time on that. It's just kind of unfortunate, a little black mark going on right now in the league. A couple other things here quick to wrap up. The dress code. What's going on with the dress code with Arizona and Toronto, Eddie? You said that you were mentioning to me that it's been relaxed a little bit. Are they not wearing suits and stuff? What are they doing over there?
Well, they could pretty much wear whatever they want. From what I read, I know Arizona did it first, and then the Maple Leafs went and kind of followed their direction. I don't know. I guess this is part of the thing where I always put professional athlete first. I think you're a professional. You should dress the part. I've seen other sports that have a lax dress code, and you have some of the players that just come looking like clowns, and it's kind of taking away from the fact that they're a professional athlete and not like a six-year-old kid on Halloween. Some of the costumes I've seen them wear of what they call fashion, I don't know. I go to Target and buy my shirt sometimes, so I guess I'm not one to say about fashion. But I think it's, I don't know, I don't like it. Maybe it's just that old school mentality that I still like want in hockey. Yeah, I do like a lot of change. I do like change in hockey, but I think the dress code is one of the things that should be kept. Coyotes, they have that lax dress code. Look how shitty they're doing. I don't know. It's not the correlation between the both. I'm just saying Maple Leafs are Maple Leafs. So I don't know. It's going around. The two teams are ready. Maybe a few more other teams are going to do it. I know it's a bit, some analysts want it, some don't. It's one of those things where it's 50-50. There's no, like, I don't really care if they do or not. It's just half the fans want it, half the fans don't. Maybe 1% don't care. I don't know. I don't like it, and I hope the Ducks don't go that direction. I think they should still keep some professionalism in the game, and I think that suit and stuff is good. I've read a few articles, too, about, like kids, like 10, 12-year-olds wearing suits. I think that's ridiculous. Like, come on, they're kids. Let them dress accordingly. But these are grown adults, professionals, getting paid good money to play a sport that we all love. So just keep that professionalism and keep the dress code as is.
Yeah, I'm a little different on this one than you, a little bit. I'm with you. I don't think it should be so lax. Like, you watch a lot of, like, football players, right? They get off the bus, they're wearing sweats and what God knows whatever else. You know, they're just kind of hanging out doing their thing. So I don't like that. I don't like where it's like this, like, hey, this is my Sunday lounge around the house clothes and I'm walking around. The suit thing, yes, I do like it. But if they weren't going to do the suit thing, then I think it should be some kind of other approved type of uniform, I guess. Something where they're all the same. So, for example, if they didn't do the suit, Arizona and Toronto, but they all wore, say, like black dress pants and a team polo shirt or something like that, I would be okay with that. Like something uniform. So if they're not going to go all suits and they're like, okay, we're not going to do that, I think that would be a good alternative. I'm not saying that that's like what everybody should do, but I like uniformity. I mean, you're a team, you're all together, right? So if the team comes together and they say, hey, we don't want to wear suits, fine, but it shouldn't be a free-for-all where you're walking around in flip-flops and sweatpants. Like, I don't like that. I think it, whatever they come up with should be a uniform. Like, even if it's a workout-type outfit, like I've been on different teams, and what we had for our outfit is we had like a polo shirt, and it was we all had the same polo shirt, same logo, everything, and then a certain type of pants with it. And that worked out for us, and it looked good. You're all together, you're wearing the same thing, you're a team, you're one. So I agree with you almost all the way. I just think if it's not a suit thing, it's not the end of the world. But I'm with you. I don't like this ragtag, wear whatever you want. You know, some people have hats, some don't. Some have sweatshirts on, some have a tie and a shirt. Like, whatever it is, I think that the team should come together and agree upon it. Outside of, let's just wear whatever the hell we want to wear. That's just me. I'm a little bit old school, I know, but that's kind of how I feel about it, Eddie.
Oh, yeah, I'm 100% suits. Like, even the polo shirts and uniformity, there's a time and place for that. I think you're a professional athlete, dressed apart, and, yeah, it's just... You get paid that much money, you can get a suit, you can come put a suit on 82 times out of the year and come play the game. Maybe the AHL, they could do something different over there, and what you did talk about, like uniformity, polo shirt, something like that. But as far as you're in the National Hockey League, the greatest and best league in the world, put a suit on. It's not going to kill you. I don't want to see you dressing like a clown. Like I said, I watch other sports too. My buddy watches basketball, watch football, and some of the like way they dress, it just, you're taking away from the team. You look like a 6-year-old, 9-year-old boy on Halloween. It's just I think that just takes away from you being a professional. So
no, I hear you. Starting next show, you will be wearing a suit for this show. Okay, every show I'm gonna televise it. Just kidding. No, I get you. I get how you feel. I just the total randomness, yeah, for sure. They're like, no, come on, guys. Oh, man. So, this show's been rocking and rolling. We've been going for a while. So, we're wrapping this up here. I got a couple quick things here. Let's see. Well, this was kind of interesting. And I know people asked about this with the Ducks and the games, but this hit Emilio Estevez with the Mighty Ducks Game Changers. So, apparently, Eddie, He's no longer doing it anymore. I guess, did he do the first season and now he's not doing the second season? You looked into this more than I did. What exactly happened? He did some of it, right?
Yeah, he was part of the first season. The show was okay. It wasn't that good. It was fun, nostalgic, because we grew up on that. And a lot of us became fans because of the movies. But it wasn't a good show. But apparently he's not going to return for season two, which is a season two that they're going to have. He cited created differences and refusal to get the COVID vaccine. That was part of their agreement. They wanted them to be vaccinated while they're going to film the show. That's per IGN. So he's not going to come back for part two. There was rumors that I forgot his real name. Holy crap. Charlie, who played Charlie Conway. Totally just like a brain fart right now on his name. But he was rumored to come back for a couple episodes. And then Keenan, that played Russ Tyler, was supposed to rumored to come back in a few shows too. But we're not going to have Emilio Estevez. So that's going to be one of those unfortunate things. I think he was the only fun thing about that show. So it's one of those things. If you like the show because of him, he won't be in it anymore. Things can change. I don't know if filming started, but as far as right now, creative differences and the COVID vaccine that he didn't want to get. So he's not going to be part of the show anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a hot topic lately. And I know some of you asked about the Duck Games. I got a little update of that from the last show. So at least in this state, they've extended their rules for the events. If it's indoor, more than 1,000 people, you have to show proof of either having the vaccine or a negative test. And there's no end date, unfortunately. So that's where they're at with that. And I applaud Emilio Estevez for, hey, I'm all about choice. I've been that way. I'm not going to get political on the show and all that stuff. But, I mean, you know, you're going to a Duck game, and they're giving you an option, you know, of either having this test, right, or taking the vaccine. You know, I don't know why that show couldn't have at least given him the option to test. I don't understand that. I think you should at least have that option. That's just my two cents. I don't want to get all political and crazy because I know everyone's on different spectrums on this thing. But I don't know. That's just kind of my take, Eddie, on that, not to get it too, wrapped up into that.
Yeah, his choice, good for him that he made that choice to turning down the money. Obviously, he's Emilio Estevez. He's a good actor. He can probably find a more work. So it's not going to be any skin off his shoulders. I think I'm not sure. I want to look into this more. I'll have more. Hopefully, there'll be more updates on this moving forward. But I know the show wasn't that good, so I don't know if that played a factor in it too, or more of a factor. But it just, I'm with you. I agree on anyone's personal choice, what they do, and you shouldn't force anyone for employment for that. I'm glad I work in places where they just, all they care about is me doing my job diligently, me doing my job right, and me making the company money. And what I care about is I'm getting a paycheck every single week, and I can go on vacations and do the stuff that I want to do with my job. So that's pretty much my mentality in life.
Yeah, exactly. So there may be more to it, like you said, maybe because the show was to do as well. Maybe he just said F it. So, if there's something else that comes out on that, we'll update it. And the very last thing is the Seattle Kraken have their own AHL team. The Coachella Valley Firebirds is the name. I like this. They're playing out in Palm Desert. They're going to start in the 22-23 season. What did you think, Eddie? I know a lot of people thought maybe the name was going to be somehow related to something with the ocean or octopus or squid or something. They ended up going with the Firebirds. I was kind of surprised. I didn't expect that as a name either, but I do like the logo. It looks pretty cool. I thought it was a good choice.
Oh, yeah. It looks like a phoenix.
Yes.
That would be a really good name too, like Coachella Valley Phoenix. Oh no, it doesn't really have a ring to it. But the Firebirds, I like the logo. I like the name. It's cool. They're playing in the desert. You really can't put water or squids in the desert. Like, I never seen an octopus in the desert. If you have, then that's pretty much amazing. It's probably a whole different dimension or something. But yeah, it's good for them. It's good for the league. It's growing. Obviously, we knew Seattle was going to get a team. So we have one closer to California again. So I believe that's four AHL teams in California when you count Bakersfield, Ontario, San Diego, and now Coachella Valley. I apologize if I'm missing any other California teams, but I think that's it, right? Four teams, AHL ones?
I believe that's it. I think you're right. If not, there might be another one we missed, but I think you're right. It's those four. Yeah, exactly. All right, well, this is a marathon show. We had a lot to cover, you know, with the Ducks this last couple weeks. Plenty to talk about. A couple little last-minute sponsors that we mentioned before. Check out buckedup.com for their energy products. Use Ducks and Pucks 93 for a discount and free shipping. And then also, if you're into vitamins, you know, it's kind of our health products, but ZStackLife.com is a good one for vitamin C, D, zinc, and quercetin. A good pill. I've been taking it for a couple weeks. Good energy as well. So a couple things to check out. If you go to the Z-Stack one, I believe there's a discount too, depending on how much you order or whatnot. But again, I'll put the links in the description box. I've been trying to get better at that. And then also check us out on Rumble as well. And we're on a whole lot of other platforms that we've joined recently. So thank you for listening. Thanks for all the fan questions. It's been exciting times with the Ducks lately. Let's see what happens in the next week or so. And we'll be back with another show. Let's go, Ducks.